Yeah. Well, thank you so much for that welcome. And Westside, I want to welcome you, those of you that are watching online as well. And I got to tell you, Eddie is one of my favorite pastors in the country. He just is. He is so such a gifted leader. He is so insightful. He's such a great communicator. And Eddie and Sharon are just loved by church leaders all around the country. And Westside, you have a treasure. You really do. I think they are two of God's best. So let's just give it up and really appreciate Eddie and Sharon and the leadership that they have. I got to tell you. Well, as Eddie said, I'm pastor at Community Christian Church of Fort Lauderdale. I've been lead pastor for the last 31 years. And our church is interesting. It's unique. I've never been to a church like it, to be honest with you. We have people at our church from 110 different nations in our church. I mean, it is this beautiful mosaic of international faith of people from all over the world. So I love to tell people that I get to be a part of a church that looks like what heaven's going to be like one day. People from every tongue and tribe and nation. And if you're ever in South Florida, if you're going on a cruise, we're kind of cruise central out of Fort Lauderdale, just come visit us on a Sunday. Just want you to feel an invitation there. Now, I want to give greetings from South Florida, the greater Miami-Fort Lauderdale area, home of almost 4 million of the worst drivers on the planet. I mean, I'm not kidding you. I mean, it's the worst. You can look it up. I mean, in South Florida, red lights are considered a suggestion, okay? Using a turn signal is viewed as a sign of weakness. I mean, it is. I mean, just last week I heard on the news, there was this report. There was this elderly man who was in Fort Lauderdale. He was driving on I-95. His cell phone rang. It was his wife, and she's urgently warning him. She said, "Herman, I just heard on the news that there's some nut that's driving the wrong way on 95. Be careful out there." And Herman said, "It's not just one car. It's hundreds of them." Sometimes we're the one, right? We're the one who's lost our way. We're the one who's lost our focus. I'm a grandpa. I'm a pop. I love being a grandpa. I got 7 grandkids, age 1 to 10. And it's my favorite thing in life. I love being a pastor, but I really love being a pop. I'll be honest with you. It's just such a great joy. And I remember John Maxwell, I heard him years ago, say that grandkids are the reward that you get for not killing your kids. So parents, hang in there. I'm telling you, it's a great season being a grandparent. It is. I just read a meme on social media last week that grandkids are the reward that you get for not selling your kids to the circus during their teenage years. So whichever meme you like or say in that way. Well, so I've got these 7 grandkids. Here's a picture of 3 of my grandkids. It's coming up here. And those are the middle 3. There's 2 that are younger and there's 2 that are older. The 2 on the outside are twins, Landon and Lily. They live in Phoenix. And the one in the middle is Roman and he lives in Charlotte. We got 4 in Phoenix, 3 in Charlotte. And that was our first family beach trip. We love the beach, but they're little. And so they finally were able to all travel to Florida. And this was 2 years ago. We had so much fun. Well, my granddaughter Lily is hilarious. She's so bright. She's so aware of what's going on. And she says the craziest things. I keep a list. So this was 2 summers ago, about 8 months later, when Lily had turned 4 years old. It was February, and they came to Florida. And it was like 80 degrees, and that's warm for us. We like it when it drops down into the 70s during the winter. But anyway, it was 80 degrees, so we said, we got to go to the beach. And so we went to the beach, but I know how cold the water is going to be. And so I said, "Look, the air is warm, but the water is going to be really cold." "Okay, Pop. So anyway, as soon as we got there, they start running for the beach because they love Florida beaches, because the beaches in Phoenix are horrible. They're just the worst. So they're running out there and they go, Pop, it's cold. I said, "I told you it was cold. Pop, come lift me up." So we're playing jump the wave, you know, and jump the wave is when you hold the littles and they're like, you hold them up and they jump the wave and they jump the wave. Well, the water's really cold, so it's really important that you help them to jump the wave. So I've done that about 15 times and Lily's having a blast and she's giggling. My wife comes out, she's got her phone and she's videotaping everything. And then she asked me a question. So I'm holding Lily and I turn and I get distracted. And I listen to what Lori says, and then the next thing I know, this wave, this cold water, February water, just washes all over Lily. I didn't lift her up. And Lily, like that. And she just looks up at me. She said, Pop Pop, focus. 4 years old, Pop Pop, focus. So that's the title of the message today, Pop Pop, focus. Okay, it's just focus. It'd be weird to call it Pop Pop, focus, but it's just focus. Because we lose our focus. I certainly do. This is week two in First World Problems teaching series. And we live in an age of abundance. And God's word encourages us to save. And that's a healthy thing. But when we go from saving to hoarding, when we go to saving without generosity, when we go from saving, really when you peel that back, it's a lack of trust. It's trusting in ourselves, but it's not trusting in God. So I want to talk to you about how do we recalibrate our hearts and our minds and our focus, because it matters more than we know. One of my life verses is found in 2 Corinthians chapter 4, verse 18. It says, so we fix our eyes not on what is seen, but on what is unseen. For what is seen is temporary, but what is unseen is eternal. Since that's a foundational verse for this message, I want you to read this out loud with me together. So here we go. So we fix our eyes not on what is seen, but on what is unseen. For what is seen is temporary, but what is unseen is eternal. How do we see the unseen? How do we make sure that we don't get swept up in the temporary? I want to share with you some principles, and maybe the most important one is the first one. It's the 5-minute principle. The 5-minute principle. You're wondering what that is. Here's the thing. 5 minutes after we die, every single one of us in this room and online, we are going to have unbelievable clarity about what really mattered in life, about relationships, about our stuff, about our faith, about everything. 5 minutes after we die, we will have incredible clarity, incredible focus about that which was most important. The problem is we can't change anything. It's too late. 5 minutes after we die, every single person in this room is going to say one of two phrases. We will either say, I am glad that I did, or I wish I had. I am glad that I did, or I wish I had. Since you're going to say this one day, 5 minutes after you die, let's go ahead and say this out loud together. Just say with me, I'm glad I did, or I wish I had. And it's my prayer, my hope for you that you will say, I am glad I did. Now, we're going to say it, first of all, as it relates to our salvation. This is not a salvation message, but my life verse is Hebrews 12, 15. See to it that no one misses the grace of God. It doesn't matter what I talk about. I can't not work that in. In my cell phone, it goes off every single day at 12:15 to remind me so I don't lose my focus. See to it that no one misses the grace of God. So if you don't have a relationship with Jesus Christ today, I want you to hear me. You're going to say either, you can say, I'm glad that I did, or you're going to say, I wish I had. For those of us that do have a relationship with Jesus, we're going to say, I am so thankful that I accepted him as my Savior and Lord. I'm so grateful that I decided to follow him, to give him my life. I'm so glad that I did. And on the other side, if you don't make that decision, I promise you, you will say, oh man, I wish I had. I wish I had. Now here's the thing. For those of us who are already followers of Jesus, I think there's going to be a second clarity moment, a second focus moment. This came kind of overwhelmed me a few years ago. We're going through a generosity initiative, and it just hit me because I did not plan on saying this, and so I'm getting a little emotional. My sister had died. And so I start thinking about the other side. And I know she's in heaven, and I have the hope, not because of my goodness, but because of God's goodness to me and my acceptance of Jesus as my Savior. But I started thinking about stuff, and I know that there's going to be a second wave of focus. And I know that when it comes to my stuff and my possessions, I'm either going to say, I am so glad that I did focus on the eternal and didn't waste so much on the temporary. I don't want to say, I wish I had when it comes to my stuff. I just don't. So that's the 5-minute principle. Jesus said, don't store up treasures here on earth. The temporary, the seen, be wiser than that. Jesus knew that things would be his biggest rival for our devotion. Jesus talked about money or possessions in 16 out of his 38 parables. One out of every 10 verses in the Gospels is about money or possessions. Jesus talked about money and possessions more than he talked about heaven, hell, and faith combined. Why did he talk about this so much? Well, he created us. And he knows the bent that we have to provide for our families, the bent that we have to, well, trust in ourselves. And he knew that it would be the biggest rival for his devotion, but also the biggest hurdle for our own happiness, because we would become deluded in thinking if we just got more stuff, we would then be happy. Now, if that's the case, then the happiest people in the world would be who? The wealthiest, right? And are they the happiest? I don't know. Here's a good question. Who's happier, the man with 10 children or the man with $10 million? It's the man with 10 children, because the man with $10 million wants more. I always love the delay to that one. So the secret to contentment is not money, it's having 10 children. No, I don't think that's the secret. Here, the real secret to happiness is not in having many things, but believing that what you have is enough. That's the secret. King Solomon was the Elon Musk, the Mark Zuckerberg, the Jeff Bezos of his day. Those are the three wealthiest individuals on the planet, according to Forbes. And so Solomon, he went on this wild spending spree in search of happiness. And this is what he concluded, Ecclesiastes chapter 5, verse 10. Whoever loves money never has money enough. Whoever loves wealth is never satisfied with his income. Now, Solomon, he's not preaching at us here. He's just telling us his life story about what he discovered. Jesus taught more about this subject than almost any other, and it's not because he wants something from you. He wants something for you. Jesus gave us his purpose statement in John chapter 10, verse 10. I have come in order that you might have life, life in all of its fullness. So I want to ask you today, are you experiencing the fullness of life? Now, if you're a believer in Jesus Christ, that's first. But if you're not experiencing the fullness of life, you are just a decision away, just a shift in focus away from experiencing the fullness of life. So I want to share with you four principles as we go through these, four more principles. And the first one is to give gratefully. Give gratefully. Let's say that out loud together. Give gratefully. I believe that giving is the only antidote to the toxic materialism of our age. I believe that to be true. Again, it's so easy for us to be deluded into thinking, if I just got a little bit more, that's when I'll be happy. So we give, and we give gratefully. And we give out of a sense of gratitude for what God has done for us. Psalm chapter 116, verse 12 says, how can I repay the Lord for all his goodness to me? We can't. We can't repay God. And so every time we give, we just are thankful to God. And we say, God, I wouldn't be alive if it wasn't for you. I wouldn't have my job. I wouldn't have my family. I wouldn't have anything. 1 Chronicles 29, 14 says, everything comes from you. And we have given you only what comes from your hand. And so we give gratefully. And when we give, in one sense, we're saying, God, thank you for what you've done. I just want you to know that I am not ungrateful. I'm not ungrateful. We identify with the Apostle Paul when we give gratefully and when we live gratefully. When Paul said in 2 Corinthians 9:15, thanks be to God for his indescribable gift. And if you're giving gratefully and you're living gratefully, it's a great place to be. It just really is. Friends, here's a very important principle, and this may be the one principle that some of you take away from today, and that's why I included it in this message. Gratitude turns what we have into enough. Gratitude turns what we have into enough. Let's say that out loud together. Gratitude turns what we have into enough. It just does. Gratitude is a superpower. Let me give you this truth. If I can't be grateful for the good things that I have right now, I will never be grateful. I'll never be grateful. Well, what about ambition? What about drive? It's not saying that that's not important. I mean, you can be ambitious, but you're grateful for what you have now, and then you're grateful for what you have in the future. If you're not grateful for what you have now, you'll never be grateful. I know some people who are win and thinners. Do you know any? I used to be a win and thinner. When I get this, then I'm going to be happy. But for me, it was more, when I accomplish this, when I take this hill, when we do this, then I'll be happy. And I lived always in the future. I'm not a win and thinner anymore. I'm too old for that. I've learned. It took me a long time to learn that. But I'm a right nower. Right now, I just want to be grateful. And I'll be grateful in the future, but I want to be a right nower. Giving changes our focus. Giving is this with gratitude is a superpower. Gratitude chases away discontentment. It chases away discouragement, even despair. Gratitude fuels hope and joy. And here's the thing about gratitude being a superpower. It's just a choice. It is just a decision. It's just a shift away. When you decide that you're going to be a grateful person, it just changes everything. That's why I led off with this. Give gratefully, giving gratefully changes our focus. And when that happens, then friends, we experience the fullness of life. Give expectantly, give expectantly. Let's say that out loud together. Give expectantly. There's a law that every farmer lives by. He lives and dies by this law. 2 Corinthians 9:6, remember this, whoever sows sparingly will also reap sparingly, and whoever sows generously will also reap generously. When a farmer plants a crop or harvests a crop, always knows that it starts at the beginning with the planting of the seed. The Apostle Paul is saying here that we get to decide how much God is going to bless us in our lives. Right now, you are deciding how much God is going to bless you in your life. We sow generously, we reap generously. Jesus said, give and it will be given to you. There's an old legend about a beggar who stopped a rich king and asked the king to give him something. And the king said, I will, but first you give me something. And the beggar just had just like a handful of grain in his pocket, and he really didn't want to give it to the king. It was going to be his next meal. So he put his hand in his pocket, and he's searching for the smallest kernel of grain that he can find. And when he finds it, he hands it to the king. And the king looks into his pouch, and he searches for the smallest nugget of gold that he can find. And then he gives it to the beggar, who lived the rest of his life regretting that he didn't give more to the king. I love that little parable. Jesus said this. He said, for with the measure you use, it will be measured to you. So we give expectantly. Now, I want you to not hear what I'm not saying. What do I mean by that? I know some of you are, oh, is this prosperity theology teacher that you give a little bit and God makes you wealthy beyond your what? No, I'm not saying that. That's why I want to tell you a couple of slogans that I'm not advocating. First of all, slogans are good. Good to the last drop is a great slogan for the Maxwell House coffee people. They still use it. Good to the last drop would not be such a great slogan, say, for the Otis Elevator Company. I mean, they could do better. They just really could. Now, let me tell you slogans that I'm not advocating. I'm not teaching prosperity theology in any kind of way. My slogan is not, make Jesus your choice and you'll drive a Rolls Royce. I'm not saying that, okay? I'm not saying make Jesus your redeemer and you'll be driving a Beamer. I'm not saying that either. I could go on. I have a lot of these, but I'm just going to spare us all from that. That's enough. You get the idea. I'm not teaching prosperity theology, but the Bible does teach that we give and it will be given unto us. Jesus says that we determine the measure. Now, that's not always financial. Some of the greatest blessings are not financial. They're spiritual. There's different kinds of blessings. But we give expectingly. Now, the next principle is to give trustingly, trustingly. That's an awkward word. I've never used that word before. I was trying to figure out what word do I use. I've never used it in a message. I don't use it. But it describes what I want to say. We give demonstrating that we trust in God. We give trustingly. Our family's financial foundation has been to tithe. My wife, Lori, and I, we're coming up on our 42nd anniversary, and we have, at the very least, given 10% of our resources every single year for the last 42 years. We just have, and God's blessed us, and, in countless ways, incredible ways. And our family's financial foundation is found in the book of Malachi, chapter 3, verse 10, which reads, "Bring the whole tithe," again, 10%, "into the storehouse, that there may be food in my house." And then God goes on, he says, "Test me in this, says the Lord Almighty, and see if I will not throw open the floodgates of heaven and pour out so much blessing that you will not have room enough for it." Now, I want to point out that this is the only place in the entire Bible where God allows us to test him. I've checked. If you do a search on testing and God, it's clear. God says, "Do not put the Lord your God to the test. You do not test me here. You do not test me there. You don't test me. You trust me." Except for this area, the area of your finances. Because I created you. I know you. I know the temptation that it is for you to trust in yourself, but you have to trust in me. So in this area alone, in the area of your finances, I not only allow you, I invite you to test me in this area by giving your tithe. Why? Because you can trust me. You can trust me. Tithing, again, is giving one-tenth, 10% to the Lord, Deuteronomy 14:22. You must set aside a tithe of your crops, one-tenth of all the crops you harvest each year. This is where you take the first 10% of your earnings or your salary or your bonuses or a commission or an unexpected windfall or an inheritance, and you consistently bring it to the church that you're a part of, to Westside, and you give it with joy, you give it with gratitude, but you give it as you trust God in this area. Some of you are thinking, "Well, Scott, you don't know my financials. I can't afford to tithe." I get that. I completely understand that. And I think that most people, when they started out to tithe, felt the same way. But they just concluded that it really isn't about money. It's about trust. That's why God says, "Test me in this, because you can trust me." Friends, here's the thing. This is an important principle. Tithing, it brings the supernatural into your finances. I said that one time, and a guy says, "Well, that's what it's going to take." Exactly. Exactly. It brings the supernatural into your finances. Let me ask you this. If God was involved in your finances, would you feel more secure or less secure? Tithing invites God into your finances. Again, tithing, I don't believe, is a money issue, even though it's a significant amount of money. It is primarily a trust issue. And I've been teaching on this now for like 28 years out of my 31. I've never had anybody tell me that they regret the decision to tithe. Never. I always throw that out, and I kind of wait. If somebody, nobody. Never in 28 years. I have had people say, "Scott, I have a regret about tithing." Really? Yeah. When I stopped, life got hard. It became difficult. I can trace that back. That's when things started to unravel. Didn't trust God, trusted myself. And I believe that God honors our obedience and our trust. And when we stop, it just compounds the problem. So how does it work if I start tithing? Good question. God might increase your income. He might lower your expenses. He might sustain your household appliances. He might protect your health. He might protect your job. He might keep your car out of the shop. God blesses us in his way and his time. Why do we tithe? Deuteronomy 14:23, the purpose of tithing is to teach you always to put God first in your lives. It's about priority. It's about trust. And friends, every committed follower of Jesus that I have ever known takes this practice of tithing very seriously. Why? Because it's about their trust. And I want to let you know, I've never known a follower of Jesus who kind of just drifted into tithe giving. It's way too big to that. "Hey, honey, guess what? We tithe last year." Nobody ever says that. It's too big. You don't drift. You just decide. And maybe for some of you, today is going to be your day where you just decide that you're going to trust God in a way, to a level that you never have before, that you're going to test him as you trust him. Leviticus 27:30 says, "A tithe of everything. It belongs to the Lord. It is holy to the Lord." So we give trustingly. And the last principle is we give boldly. We give boldly. Let's say that together. Give boldly. Give boldly. Again, I believe that tithing is the foundation. It's the standard. It's what God wants for us so that we will trust him. But I think there comes a time, and this isn't every year, but I think that we excel in our generosity. The Apostle Paul wrote in 2 Corinthians chapter 8, verse 7, "But just as you excel in everything, in faith and speech and knowledge and complete earnestness and in your love for us, see that you also excel in this grace of giving." How do we excel in the grace of giving? How does that shift our focus? Well, I got to tell you, it does when we give boldly. So just hold that thought just for a moment. 17 years ago, I was reading a book by a friend, Rick Rusaw, and it was at the beginning of one of the chapters in that book that I read a quote by somebody else that changed my life. And ultimately, it changed our church. And this is the quote. It was game-changing for me. It's by Keith Johnstone. "There are people who prefer to say yes, and there are people who prefer to say no. Those who say yes are rewarded by the adventures they have. And those who say no are rewarded by the safety they attain." And when I read that, I was not at a bad place in life. I was at a pretty good place, but there was something that just happened inside of me. And I sensed God calling me to start to say yes to some things that I'd been saying no to for me and for the church. And I started to say yes. And I got to tell you, I don't have time. I wish I did. I could tell you how that rippled out, not just in my life, but our entire church. There are people who prefer to say yes. There are people who prefer to say no. Those who say yes are rewarded by the adventures they have. Those who say no are rewarded by the safety they attain. 50 people over the age of 95 were asked by a research organization, "If you had to do life all over again, what would you do differently?" One of the top three responses, "I would risk more." Most people, when they get to the end of their life and they're looking back, they don't regret the things so much they did. They regret the things that they did not do. I love the phrase in the song by Matthew West, "All In." Turns out safe is just another word for regret. Friends, you don't want the song "Born to Be Mild" played at your funeral. You don't. I got a fear on that. I want to say yes, and I've been saying yes to the adventure. Paul said to his protege Timothy, he said, "For God's not given us a spirit of fear and timidity, but of power and love and self-discipline." The Hebrew writer, we don't know who the Hebrew writer is, but said, without faith. And what is faith? Well, he defined faith in verse 1, but I'm going to describe faith. And what is faith, really? It's just saying yes to God. Yes, God, I believe in you. Yes, God, I want to trust you. Yes, God, I want to follow you. Without faith, without saying yes to God, it's impossible to please God. Because anyone who comes to him must believe that he exists and that also that he rewards those, there's that idea, who earnestly seek him. When we say yes, God rewards us with the adventure. That can be more than we ever ask or imagine. And that's why I think sometimes we give boldly. I don't give boldly every year. Sometimes I do. And it's amazing. Maybe God's calling you. Maybe you've been a follower of Jesus. Maybe this is kind of, you know, you're not on the front end of life. You got littles. You're just, I mean, it's a big, big decision is today. I'm gonna test God. I'm going to trust him. I'm just going to tithe. But maybe you're at a season of life where you have more resources and there's that temptation just to save and save and save. And you're kind of seeing the future on the other side where you don't want to, you know, get caught up in the temporary, but you want to focus on the eternal. And so you say, God, what do you want me to do? How do you want me to give boldly? Just pray that prayer. Randy Reed was a 34-year-old construction worker. He was working on an almost completed water tower outside of Chicago. There were some pipes that needed to be connected. He's at the very top, and he's trying to reach the pipes, and he's just right out of reach. They're in this metal cage. So he unclicked his safety harness so he could reach the pipes, and the cage bumped the scaffolding that he was on. He lost his balance. He fell 110 feet face down. He just missed some rocks. He just missed some construction debris. Fellow coworker called 911. Paramedic showed up. He's conscious. He's moving a little bit. He's complaining about a sore back. But evidently, he didn't lose his sense of humor. So when they put Randy Reed on a backboard as they were transporting him to the ambulance, he said, "Hey, don't drop me. Don't drop me. Don't drop me." And the doctors later said that he only suffered from a bruised lung. Wow, what a miracle. I think sometimes we're like Randy Reed. God protects us from a 110-foot fall, and we're still anxious about 3-foot heights. The God who is able to rescue us and save us from hell and death is more than capable of protecting us from the challenges that we face every day, every week. A few years ago, I came across this quote that just resonated with me. We trust God with our eternal destiny. Why can't we trust him with our next day's needs? I'm banking on the fact that God exists. I'm banking on the fact that Jesus Christ is going to save my soul one day. So why can't I trust him to do what he asked me to do and to give what he asked me to give? Today is June the 8th, and I believe for some in this room, it's going to be a defining moment. You're going to look back, yep, that's when I decided to trust God in a way that I'd never trusted him before. I believe that some of you are sensing that God is calling you to test him because you can trust him, and you're going to trust him and honor him with the first 10% of your income. And you sense God calling you to do that today. Some of you, you've been faithfully honoring God with your tithe, and God, he's just saying, way to go, keep it up, you're doing great, just continue to trust me, continue to be generous, just that's what you need to do, just way to go, just recalibrate yourself, you need to maintain your focus, keep that. But I think there might be some, not a lot, but I think there might be some in this room that God is calling you to more. God is calling you to go beyond. God is calling you to excel in the grace of giving. And you trust God in a way that you haven't before because you're seeing the unseen. You're not going to get caught up in the trap of the temporary, but you're seeing the eternal. King David in the Old Testament said some words that I think are so simple yet profound. He said in Psalm chapter 56, verse 4, "In God I trust, I will not be afraid." Wouldn't that be a great life verse, that's your life verse? In God I trust, I will not be afraid. We're going to end the teaching time today with just saying these words out loud together. Here we go. In God I trust, I will not be afraid. Okay, we're going to say it one more time. This time really good and strong, really loud, really believing these words. Here we go. In God I trust, I will not be afraid. You can trust him. You really can trust him. You can.